Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, the podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society can sometimes make us feel ashamed of. My name is Caroline and I believe that is called al fresco. Joining me is a man whose noise makes it apparent it's all over, Connor Finch.
Very nice.
That's really mean. That's a really mean way to introduce you, but no. I could not. I'm really sorry.
No, it's great. I liked it. I was like, where's she going to go? You've got the alfresco bit in. Where's it going from here?
So today, Connor, we're talking about Lily Allen. And I met you for the first time a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. We were on a day out with our mutual friend and benefactor, Dolly Alderton.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, wow, it's straight from the show. Obviously. Sorry. Well, I was like, oh, it's the new, like, it's the bad boy of BBC iPlayer. What's he gonna do?
Yeah.
And then quite quickly we got talking about music, and then even quicklier we got into talking how much you bloody love Lily Allen.
Yeah.
In a way that I said this to you at the time, it's like it's quite rare to find men who will talk about the women musical artists that they love in a way that's so unabashed and emotional and not sort of like arm foldy and like, yeah, she's pretty good, like some good tunes, you know?
Yeah. Because we met and we started talking about my experience with the Libertines.
Yeah.
At a Rolling Stones gig.
Yeah.
And I genuinely think the most excited I was all day was when my mate texted me. He was at Glastonbury. And she was like, Lily Allen's just come out. And she's sung this song. And I think that's when you clocked.
Yeah.
Because I freaked out. And I was like, oh, what?
And I think back, then, she's on stage. She's with Olivia Rodrigo.
I know. Back at Glastonbury. I was like, this is it. Texting my mate, being like, I think there's a tour coming, it's got to be an album. He's like, I think it might have just been an appearance. I was like,
no, it always means something.
Yeah. And I think that was probably the most excited I was all day, talking about
in the presence of Mick Jagger and Keith Richards.
Yeah.
Talking about Lily at another end of the country.
Yeah.
I love. So what got you into her and why do you love her so much? I realise it's a huge fucking question.
Yeah. I definitely have my mate Aaron to thank for getting me into Lily Allen. I think that's sort of, I've known him for years, but it's like, that is my first memory, is his love of Lily Allen.
Really?
So then I started listening to her quite a lot. And I mean, I must have been like early years of high school. Mm. So this is like 2008, 2007. Mm-hmm. And you know, I started with that first album and I heard a lot of my favourite musicians in her music.
Mm.
Because I do think she's got such a London sound.
Yeah.
So I heard a lot of, which I didn't know at the time, but are a lot of her sort of inspirations of like the Specials and even the Clash.
Yeah.
You know, like rock bands and stuff like that. I was like, they're there.
Yeah, revisiting that first album, I couldn't believe, because like my favorite thing about doing this podcast is when people who I asked to do an episode with me, they name something that I'm definitely familiar with, but I haven't thought about in years.
Yeah,
and was I definitely like had an interest in her, but she was never a big focus of mine, and so I had never listened to that album all the way through, that first album, and I was like, wow, this is so sonically interesting. Like, there's, like, ska in there, there's reggae.
Yeah.
You can definitely hear the Specials, you can definitely hear the Clash. Like,
yeah.
It's so, like, I remember I heard her on Desert Island Discs, and the first song she picks is Common People. And you're like, oh, yeah, there's a straight line between hearing that as a child and making the music that you make. It's so obvious.
Absolutely. And I think there's that, and it's sort of like, obviously, I do think she's someone that has just got such her own sound. And, you know, I think a lot of people have even now, there's, I hear a lot of musicians that are taking a lot of inspiration from her, but a lot of people heard that at the time was like, oh, I could probably do this as well. So, yeah. But it's her sound, because there's also, like, you know, especially from a Desert Island disc, there's like garage music and stuff like that. And like, when she's doing certain songs on that first album, and it's like, you hear it all there. And I think that was what was brilliant. I still think it's, in terms of debut albums, this is big, but it's like top five for me, debut albums. Yeah.
But again, but the thing is, like, I think it's normal for a debut album to wear its references quite heavily. Like, I think that's normal and good and actually exciting. It's one of the exciting things about listening or reading a debut anything, you know? It's like, oh, this is someone who's just forming their identity and they're still wearing the stuff they love really close to them. And so if you're a fan of a lot of music, there's that fun identifying thing, right? And it feels fresh and young, and you can feel someone... It almost makes that music new for you again when you feel someone coming into that stuff. But I feel like, I don't know, if you listen to, for example, The Libertines, a band we both love, you can feel like, oh, this is, they clearly love The Clash. They clearly love The Rolling Stones. This is like, this is like a boys who grew up with the dream of what a rock star was.
Absolutely,
And they were creating it, and like Bully, you know, good for them. Yeah. And like Oasis and all that stuff. But with Lily, it feels like much more of a melting pot. And when you say it's a London sound, like particularly with those first two singles, which like blew up so quickly, LDN and Smile, it even now when you listen to it, like, and like having lived in London for 11, 12 years, like it, you feel like you're like walking down like Brixton Market and you can smell weed and like you can just smell weed. You know, it's not like, it's not next to you, but it's somewhere.
You know? I think that's so true as well. Like, you know, I hold my hands up that like as soon as sort of January, February, March, April start getting out of the way, there's a bit of sunshine coming, I can just go out in a t-shirt. My headphones are in and LDN's on.
It's like, the myth that comes on. It's
It's unbelievable. I still think every time I've seen her live, that's got the most reaction when you hear that bit of an intro.
Yeah.
The crowd go mad for it.
It is so instant, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. I think that's what it is. There's no like, you're almost waiting for the chorus to come. It's not. It's straight away that instrumental. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know what's coming.
It's so smart. It's so fucking smart. She's such a smart like artist. And it's so interesting because like, so you sent me a list of 12 songs. And I, when people are doing musicians, I was like, okay, obviously their oeuvre is too big. Pick me some songs that you think are, you know, the ones to talk about.
And
you sent me a very diligent email saying, I've sent two lists.
Yeah, I had sent two lists.
My first list is what I believe to be her best work, and the second is what I believe to be her quintessential work, which is like the level of nerdiness. I just was like, oh, Connor, I love you. But I've arranged your choices chronologically. I feel like Kirsty Young. And the first one that you put on the list is LDN. And obviously, I think that was, Smile was the first single, LDN was the second, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I remember like, when she came out, I'm a little bit older than you, but like, so I was like in my later teens. But there was, certainly from where I was, a very confused and almost borderline angry reaction to her immediately. Yeah. For someone who's making very fun, gorgeous outdoor music that like, it's like she went on to be something of a controversial artist, but just based on these singles, I don't find them like, they're like,
yeah, I think I've always been really confused, because I think you're right, she, a lot of people would say she's a controversial artist. I'm like, why? Like, I think that first album sums it up. She's just incredibly honest.
Yeah And there's, she's not interested in subtext or games or riddles.
No.
Like, which I love about her. Like, I think there are obviously some artists who you can really adore, like picking through the meanings and like, you know, it's that the whole Taylor Swift thing of being like, oh, she loves the number 13.
Yeah.
And this is a reference to Harry Styles because we've seen in this press photo he's wearing this necklace or whatever.
Yeah, literally.
But like, if Lily Allen dated Harry Styles, the first line of the song was, so I was dating Harry Styles and then Harry Styles came up to me and said, Lily, your music's shit. Like, that's what it would be. It's like, the, I actually love that she's not subtle, that she chooses to be not subtle. Yeah. And she's that way about everything.
Yeah, I can't help but think that's a bit of a London thing again, really.
What do you think?
I think so. Because even, you know, compared to someone like Amy Winehouse, again, something like the song Rehab, very clear what that's about.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's not like you could have made so many lyrics with subtext for that kind of song. No, no, no. This is about me not going to rehab.
That's,
do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, and
so
I think there's something so honest in that. And I think for the amount of people that love it, there's also a bunch of other people that might write about it.
Yeah.
That go, well, you've put us out of a job here because our job is to kind of break down what lyrics mean, and you've just told everyone.
Yeah, genius.com would not exist if every artist was Lily Allen.
Yeah, literally.
She's like, yeah, well, she says that she wants to get laid, and she does. It's funny, you've really sparked something in my brain when you said that thing about London artists, and I'm thinking of other London, like Amy Winehouse, like, yeah, she's saying she needs to go to rehab or whatever, or The Clash as well. Very, very clear what they mean and what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And it's this. It reminds me of this literally years ago, and I'm probably misquoting it, but I did a sociology minor in university. I know, brag. But I remember this study. I remember really clearly. It was a study about high context and low context societies. So a low context society means that there are a lot of different diverse people living in that area. So London would be a low context society. And what it's meant by low context is when you meet someone on the street, you don't know where they're from and you don't know where they're going and you don't know what their deal is. And so
right.
And so you kind of you need them to be clear and you need to figure it out kind of thing.
Yeah.
And this study was actually, it was on small talk. It was like people in the British love small talk because the Britain is a more diverse society. There's lots of different groups going on.
Mm.
And so they need small talk to understand where everyone's coming from. And you get somewhere like Finland, where everyone's broadly the same. Very little small talk because it's a high context society. They all know each other.
Right.
So the reason I'm talking about that is that like, London's a low context city. You need to be direct. You need to say what you mean because we're in a place where people speak a lot of languages coming from a lot of different contexts.
Yeah.
You need to be like, I'm not going to rehab.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Literally, yeah.
And I think that might be, I'm kind of interested now to follow that through the thread of all London music, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's there. And I think that's what's great. Especially when I think of like The Clash, Amy Winehouse, Lily Allen.
Even it's Grime and stuff,
one.
It's
yeah.
real, like, this is exactly what's going on. This is the road I live on.
Yeah, it, literally.
These are who my friends are called.
Yeah, but like going right back as well, like Chaz and Dave.
Like, yeah,
you know.
Dave.
I'm not comparing Lily Allen to Chaz and Dave. That's not what I'm doing, but.
I don't think she'd mind.
Love Chaz and Dave.
I remember this like real anger happening around her, and I think that was coming from a lot of different places.
Mm.
I think, first of all, and it's hard to talk about this because there is like the immediate thing of like, she's got famous parents. Like, she's got a dad who's Keith Allen and a mum who's like, you know, works at Working Title. She's a film producer.
Mm.
Her stepfather was Harry Enfield.
Yeah.
There was all these stories about how she was a baby at Glastonbury. And what's difficult to parse about this conversation is that the arts is fucking picked apart clean by nepotism hires. Do you know what I mean? And it's and like, you know, both of us work in the arts. Neither of us have, you know, blue link Wikipedia parents.
No.
Like, and it's, and like, honestly, you have to work hard the longer you're in this business to like not become an arsehole about it.
Yeah.
Of like learning that someone got a job or whatever and then literally Googling them and then finding out that they're like fucking, their mum is the director of some huge like arts thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, how the fuck am I supposed to do
exactly
this?
Because you can't ever help but think, oh, if I had that, then would I have got somewhere else or would I be better? But I don't know. I mean, it's weird because I do agree with that, but then at the same time, I'm like, both of her parents, and I only know this from her book, I didn't know this before reading the book, was that they're both from working class backgrounds.
Yeah.
So it's like, I do think that has an impact on the way, you know, you must have to think about how you raise children, especially if they want to get into the arts, you know. It's like, how much of a foot up do we give them? Do we give them any at all?
Yeah.
You know, or do you look at it in the sense of going, we came from nothing, we didn't get that, so as soon as I can give that opportunity to someone else, I want to.
Yeah.
I don't think that was the case.
I don't think she was like ever given like directly a job from, she obviously never was given a job from her parents. It's not that clean cut, but it's more one of those nebulous things of like, it allowed her to be in worlds where she met people that possibly escalated and whatever. And but like, I wouldn't, like, that's not to say also that she's a phenomenal talent and like,
yeah,
you know, we we need to keep her like, yeah. She deserves to be here. She's proved time and time again that she deserves to be here, up against this thing of like, yeah, like having the instant narrative around you as you come out, being like, you went to all these fancy private schools, you had all these famous people around you from a really young age. But I do think that something about Lily having this really specific background gives her an insight and a bravery and a candidness that other artists don't have, because they don't have the same kind of 360 view of what fame is and what it can't give you.
Yeah. That is very interesting.
But the weird thing is that, and this is a bit naughtier, and I'm going to be talk about it carefully, people aren't mad about Cara Delevingne in the same way, or Jemima Kirk in the same way, right? Mm. Whose like parents are famous or whatever. And I think it's because those girls were immediately baked in like a very traditional type of beauty and glamour. They looked like 1950s starlets immediately. And it was almost like, oh yeah, we can always make room for more of those. we can always make room for more waist-length, blonde hair, cheeky gal who gets to be in the Evening Standard at parties. And then sometimes she does stuff and we're okay with it, kind of thing. That we're fine with as a society. But like, there's something like Liliana, like, but like, she looks weird. Like, she looks weird.
Well, she created a look.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that was like, that her look, especially for that first album, of like, that become like a style, like,
yeah,
through her doing it.
It was huge.
Yeah.
And I remember growing up in Ireland, we were so confused by it. We did not know what to think, because it was obviously cool. Like, the thing of like, it was so iconic, this thing of these prom dresses, the sort of the hair up high and the big gold earrings and loads of eyeliner and the trainers. It was just a manner of putting things together that hadn't quite been put together before. And also had this thing of like, okay, she's wearing vintage dresses, which we like and is cool.
Yeah.
But the gold hoops scare us because we live in this very classist society where we're afraid of poor people. And like, and the trainers, that I can't even compute. And like, I remember just being like, us not even able to figure it out.
Yeah.
And so, and then she's just this girl who just seems very ordinary, wearing this mad shit, and also her parents are famous. And so I think that made people very rankled. Because it's like, if you're going to be a famous person, then be Cara Delevingne.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I get what you mean. Like, it was almost like she was just like, she almost did the opposite of maybe what would have been expected.
Yeah.
Of her, you know.
Yeah.
She could have very easily, I don't know. And I think she talks about it all the time, about how she didn't fall into being like that kind of pop star straight away, where she was learning dance routines and that sort of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the people who do love her music, they're like, that's why they love her.
Because
she didn't come on the scene and try to be like another pop star.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't like a package ready to be sort of digested. And it's a thing of like, if nepotism were the only thing that were required to make a good music career, then Kelly Osbourne would have had a bigger musical career. Now, I like the single Shut Up, but...
Yeah, there you go.
The next song you have on your list is Knock 'Em Out.
Mm.
And it's one of the songs from Lily where... Well, first of all, why did you put it on? You picked four songs from this album, and that this is one of them.
Yeah. I don't know. There's so many different reasons why I love this song. I love that there's the kind of... She does the different voices of people. I'm like, I think that's brilliant. I think that's so cool. She's doing like...
Whenever I'm listening to it, I'm always like, who is this featuring?
Yeah. She's like taking the piss out of like a guy, obviously, or like you're saying something. And you know, it's like all the reasons of basically telling a guy to fuck off without telling someone to fuck off, basically.
Yeah.
You know, and she's like, I've got to go, my house is on fire. Like, you know, that is a huge fuck off, mate. Just leave me alone.
It's so good. I love the dialogue of it. It's this thing with her where a lot of her songs, they almost verge on comedy song.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, Not Fair is almost that as well. It's almost 100%. Like a joke song, but there's enough kind of realness in there that makes you like, oh no, this is just like,
yeah,
it's pulling back, and it's a sort of like great, it's a huge bop as well.
Yeah. I think she does that a lot. I think it was something that probably went on until like the third album, but like even Alfie on the first album, and again, like the music videos that went with it, like her brother Alfie's like a puppet in the music video. It's just like a
furiously wanking puppet.
Yeah, in like a really like hot boxed bedroom, and she uses like a little door to get in, and I'm like, that's hilarious.
It's so good. Yeah. It's so weird with Alfie Allen, isn't it? That like he was a character in her songs, and then he was this like became this actor on Game of Thrones.
Yeah, huge. I met him at one of Lily's gigs.
On.
It was actually the last gig that I've been to of hers. Maybe the last gig she's done in London. And me and my mate Aaron, who I've seen Lily like 3 times, and he's always been the one that's got the tickets. Like he's the fan. And for whatever reason, we sort of got there a bit early. We wanted to worm our way into the crowd.
Sure.
And we was in the bar. It was at the Roundhouse in Camden, and my Aaron just turned around. He's like, "Is that Alfie Allen?" I was like, come off it, mate. I was like, we're at Lily Allen's gig. You're telling me that Alfie Allen is stood at the bar with everyone else. I turned around, I was like, fucking Alfie Allen. And this is like him at his like peak in Game of Thrones. But at that time, I'm like,
yeah,
what the hell? Straight away, like, no, nothing else other than full fan moment. Okay, and went up to him. Alfie, can we get a picture, please?
Oh my god.
Literally.
Gosh.
And the worst thing about it is like, I don't think Aaron did, and I know I didn't, had ever seen Game of Thrones. We were literally getting a picture with Lily Allen's brother.
Well, you did the thing where you were robotic and said, yeah, huge fan. Yeah.
Oh, a massive. Yeah. I think we might have mentioned something to do with the song Alfie.
Oh, right. They love that.
Yeah, I was like,
it's so funny how Alfie Allen's penis has been the through line of his whole career. Just decided to wait until you're taking a drink for that one. That song was about him, from what I remember, it was wanking furiously all the time.
Just smoking weed and I think just being like,
just being a scumbag teenager. And then obviously in Game of Thrones, his character was like, fucking got his dick chopped off. So I was like, it's a real through line. One song that you pointed out to me that I'd never heard before this, but I fell in love with on this listen, was Nan, You're a Window Shopper.
Unbelievable.
What the fuck is up with that song?
Unbelievable. So again,
cussed
this
out your
is
Nan
something
for no reason.
So I think it's the sample. I'm pretty sure it is. It's a sample from a 50 Cent song.
Oh really?
And she's just changed the lyrics to her own lyrics, which I just think is like, I mean, that goes to show like what artist does that?
There's something so amazing about creating like a proper diss track about your nan.
Yeah, and it is.
It's a diss track.
She like goes in on it as well, like,
yeah. For no reason.
Yeah.
Where she says she's talking about her nan. You only buy the paper to cut out the coupons, but nan, what do you want with tampons?
You're saving 50p. What do you want with tampons?
Yeah.
So like, it's like, again, I mean, who ever thought they could rhyme or put that in a song?
It's
coupons.
So good. And you're right, the sample is so good as well. The like, the very beginning, the bottom is so much better than the top. All of her songs in that album, it's like within the first 4 seconds, it like injects you with something.
Unbelievable, yeah.
It's like, it feels like an album, again, and then this is the kind of fun of debut albums in general, I think, is like someone who knows they only have a minute to get your attention, so they're just putting it all up front, you know, they're like, it's really good.
Yeah. But it did, it's so true, actually, like that whole album, like, it really does feel like that everything is straight away. Even the slower songs, which is probably not, compared to like other albums of hers, it's not got loads of slow songs on there, but they do still get you straight away.
Mm.
I mean, it's that album is probably the album that I play the most when I'm getting ready to go on a night out. I can't usually get away with it if I'm doing like a massive pre-drinks with loads of mates, being like, guys, I think we should get ready to
Lily Allen.
Lily Allen, everyone up for that? And once that finishes,
we can just put on the next album.
Why do you... So, as you know, I don't have many male guests on.
Yeah.
You're of a very rarefied set.
I know, I feel very lucky, fortunate, thank you.
There are guys that I ask and they're just like, oh, I can't really think of anything I like that much that fits the brief or that's like considered very female or whatever. And I don't think that's true. I think it's that that maybe like, first of all, to publicly go on the record very loving a very female thing still feels like a dangerous thing for men to do, which I find very sad. And it is this thing where it's like, we talked about it before we started recording. I'm like, guys will throw out like their favorite artists, and it'll all be men, and then they'll sprinkle in a woman that they're kind of into. I call it like Smurfette syndrome. It's like one girl just to balance out the crowd, you know. And they'll, and I notice guys do it with a lot of things. Like the only woman they read is Zadie Smith. or now it's Sally Rooney as well. That'll be like the one book by a woman they'll read, and then they're like, "I'm good. I've done my homework."
Yeah.
thing. And it makes me sad because it's like, what are you not opening yourself up to?
Yeah,
you know?
It feels like, I think that's it. I think there's sort of something that they're like, oh, if I'm gonna get into reading, then I've got to read something by,
yeah,
so. It's like, actually, I'd probably say all the best books I've ever read. Written by women.
Yeah.
You know.
We're really good at it. You're starring in a book by a woman.
I am.
And a set entirely controlled by women. You're basically the only man.
Yeah. But again, it was like, you know, that was... I couldn't have asked for a better job. That was amazing. And I still remember saying, when I had my recall for that at Working Title, and I finished up, and I thought, oh, you know, that Working Title, I didn't really, like, this is huge. And I literally said, as I walked out, I was like, even if I don't get this, I genuinely think this is one of the best scripts I've ever read in my life.
Oh.
And I still stand by that. Like, I think I think I only had like the first three episodes.
Yeah.
But even that, I was like, it was amazing. And then I like did something that I thought would be really bad if I didn't get it. But I then went and read the book and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. So, I agree.
Isn't she great?
She's great. She's great.
big fan of her over here.
Big, yeah.
Just
a room full of big Dolly Alderton fans.
Yeah, that's it.
And Lily Allen.
Let's move on to the second album now. This is an album that I loved. Because I worked in HMV during the time, it was like a huge, it was always on rotation. It was one of the few albums that like, because like there were certain kind of rules around what you could put on the playlist. It had to be something that was like we had at least 20 copies of. Because the point of the playlist was that you had to sell CDs through it.
Right.
And obviously this album from the second it came out, it wasn't like the grower that All Right Still was. It felt like this became a smash immediately.
Oh my God, yeah,
huge. And so we always had it in, and it was one of the few things that everyone on staff would agree was good, you know. Even by the end of it, we got sick of it because it was on so much. It was like, oh yeah, it's, you know, everyone agrees, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I also think it's possibly my favourite album title.
Yeah, is that me? It's you.
Yeah, I'm like, I think that's brilliant. But yeah, I think that took, it kind of took that first album, was like, oh, okay, people have responded well to what I want to do here.
Mm.
Now I'm going to put it all on the table.
Yeah.
I think that really showed her sound, who she is.
Yeah.
You know, there's a bit of everything in there. It really is. I think that's like one of her albums that it's like, there's a song for everyone on there, you know?
Not fair.
Oh my God.
I can't believe she got away with it still. And that's where I think she becomes like, obviously on the first album you got songs like LDN where it's like, I believe it's a pimp and it's crack all kind of thing. That's like a bit shocking. And like, there are definitely bits on an album where you're like, oh, she's trying some stuff out. But it feels like a rebellious teenager who's trying some stuff out.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it really does feel like somebody who's collected what they believe and what their experience are, knows that their experiences matter, and is just like I just remember, because at this point, you know, I would have been, when did it come out? 2011? No, 2020, I think. No, 2010 rather, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, you know, a grown person having sex, and the fact that like that like someone was talking about the wet patch.
Yeah.
It's just like, what? Like, no one's ever mentioned that ever. Just like,
yeah.
And like, with no context, no like poetic, like, you know,
no.
alluding to like, exactly. oh, a certain dampness on the sheets or yeah, whatever. Yeah. It's just like, oh, I'm lying on the wet patch. Like, not, no, she knows whatever. She has enough faith in her own songwriting and her own voice to know that everybody else knows what she means, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of them songs as well where I mean, I was quite young when that came out. I mean, I was in high school, but. Mm. I just remember being like for ages loving it because it was like had this sort of western and country style, but like
a great video and, that went with it.
Yeah, the video and everything, and it was like great. And then the more I listened to it, I was like, I really like this. Seems weird. Usually I know what a lot of, you know, her lyrics mean because it's quite self-explanatory. And like, I remember listening to it like all the time in the car with my mum, and I was like, Mum, I was like, what does giving head mean?
No way! How old were you?
I was like 12.
Oh my gosh!
I have checked in with my mum that I could tell this story, and she was she basically explained what the entire song was about. We like obviously had it on repeat all the time, and then we went back and she sort of like paused it and started it again and would like break it down for me.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah, she's always been like that. To be fair, my mum, she's always like whenever I used to come out of school and not know what a word was, she was like. Tell me the word. Yeah. If I know what it means, I'll tell you what it means, and I can tell you if you're allowed to use it or not.
That's good. Like, yeah. I'm like,
so
what a way
was.
To guarantee that your son's never going to be bad in bed by like, explaining every line of Not Fair.
Yeah, so that was, that's a fond memory of that song.
What I love about that song, it's like another, like a lot of her songs, this thing that almost verges into joke song territory.
Yeah.
Like, you could see. A song like this being on like an SNL skit or something, yeah. You could see like the female cast of SNL doing something like this with maybe 10% more jokes and it being a huge viral hit.
Yeah.
But it's not a joke song, and there's a few really subtle choices in it that really like pull it back from that edge.
Mm.
And I think it's that like the joke version of this song would be taking the piss out of his entire personality.
Yeah.
And then being like, Annie's bad in bed kind of thing. Yeah, you know, kind of thing. But it's this thing of like, what makes it sort of like more lyrical and more of a story in my eyes is that like, this is somebody that does respect her, is nice to her. Yeah. They have a laugh together. He, you know, he calls her all the time and stuff. But when it comes to sex, he just can't do it. Like, he's just like, he's just fucking useless.
Yeah.
And like.
Because it's truth in that, right? Like, I'm not saying for everyone, but like, you know, that there's. Certain parts of relationship where it's like, you can't wish for a better person.
Yeah.
And there's other parts where you don't ever tell them, or you go, clearly in this song she does tell that person.
Yeah.
Where she's just like, but you are all of that, and I love you for it. But you are shit in bed.
You are shit in bed. And I do think it's this thing of like, I think she gets to something really deep in it. Like, yeah. And I know it is a funny song, but like, there's this thing of like sex being the closest way two people can possibly communicate with one another.
Yeah.
But also being this thing that like for many, many couples is like totally taboo to actually talk about.
Yeah.
Like of like this thing of like it's the most intimate way you could possibly be with a person, but we don't talk about it before it's happening, while it's happening, or when it's done. It's got like everything that happens within this vortex. Must be sort of like I would draw a veil around it, and like I've known so many women over the years that like they've with brilliant partners that they just can't, they literally cannot communicate with them because whenever sex comes up, the only way they can talk about it is like in this kind of, oh, we had a nice time last night, didn't we? Dinner and a bit of dessert kind of thing. But like having a real, this is probably way too personal, a story to share in the pub. I remember when me and Gav were together a couple of years. And we'd had some nice time in bed, and then I popped up and I was like, should we have a sex audit? He was like, what do you mean? I was like, I think we should have an audit. I mean, go through it, and like, because you never know what's working for the other person, or
totally.
Not, unless you actually have an audit.
You think you know.
You think you know. But like, there is a sense with sex that we're all kind of on stage in a little way.
Yeah.
And like it means that like actual communication. On that stage becomes very difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just like, people should have a sex audit every couple of years.
Yeah, and then you won't have people writing songs about it.
Exactly. But yeah, like, I don't know. I always found it like sort of funny when I was younger, but the older I get, the more I find it very profound.
Yeah.
when it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. It seems odd that, you know, something so, as you say, intimate and, like, actually, like, a big thing, you know, there's maybe times where it doesn't feel like a big thing, but I think overall, like, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
So, like, why do you not talk about it with the person? It's not like you have to talk about it with anyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
Literally talk about it to the person that's there with you.
Yeah.
In that moment.
And it's also the thing of, like, coming to that chorus, when you're building up this, like, quite jokey kind of character assassination of being like, this guy is sound, but he's just in bed. And then the chorus being like, it's not fair.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's such an empowering message for girls to hear. Like, yeah. It's not like, this guy's a prick and I'm going to dump him now. It's like, it's not fair. It's not fair to have sex with someone and not be having an equitable amount of pleasure. It's not fair to not ask for those things. And like,
that's so true. Yeah. It's also like, I always find it funny in that song where, like, just before the chorus comes in, it's like a really flat note on like a harmonica gets played. It's like, because I'm like, that sort of sums it up, doesn't it, really?
It's so weird that it's a Western theme, like, for no reason. It makes no sense.
No, but it works.
Yeah, yeah. Her sort of like dipping her toe in around different things. Like, you can so tell it's somebody with like an incredibly eclectic palette.
Yeah,
you know?
That's another reason I think she's great. It's because I think you can really tell when you get into her music where her inspirations come from. I don't think if you just say to anyone, like, oh, there's definitely like inspiration, as you know, from The Clash or The Specials in Lily Allen, they'd be like, what?
Yeah,
but there is,
and genuinely diverse. Like, you can hear like ska in there and reggae in there and like grime in there and whatever. And I love that she feels that sense of freedom with it. And she also features people on a record, so it's not it never feels like she's cribbing. Like,
no.
She's not, it doesn't feel appropriative to me. Obviously, I'm not in a position to like decide what is or isn't appropriative, but like, it doesn't feel like she's just nicking stuff off cultures that she doesn't care about, you know?
I never thought about that.
It never feels contrived, which is interesting because like, I heard her talking about her third album, She's Is.
Yes.
And we have 12 songs today and you have not included any of the Jesus tracks.
I haven't, no. That was the first time I saw her live. When
oh, really?
It was on the Jesus tour. And obviously I'd seen like YouTube clips of her live before that. I just remember even like looking at like the stage, the set before she came out. I was like, it seems different. And everything did seem different, you know.
Different how? What was the kind of aesthetic and the mood?
There were, like, you know, backing dancers. It felt more like a pop star. I think that was it. It was like, oh. But I saw it at the time as being like, well, fucking yeah. Like, you can't stay like this. It's like when people talk about, like, I don't know, like Arctic Monkeys. You know, it's like, yeah, but they're not that band.
Yeah, they can't stay the Sheffield band who are singing about nightclubs. It's like they're singing about space.
Yeah, they're like, what are you going to do? They're like living out in LA now. They can't talk about, you know, Rotherham. You know, so it's like, I just saw it like that. I was like, she's just huge now. She has become a huge, famous
pop
star.
That second album just went and went and went, and like, she made her even more famous as a musician in a way that people weren't willing to admit before. Like, she got Ivor Novello Awards for that and everything, you know?
Yeah, was it? I think she was like three.
Yeah.
Which is like
nuts.
Yeah, I think only one person's done that since.
Really?
I think I could be really wrong in saying that. But I think that is the case. And it's like, and obviously that's something that's picked by people in the industry.
Mm.
It's not picked by fans necessarily. It's,
yeah.
And so it is, it's that album. So I think I was like, I mean, when it came out, I still loved Jesus because I was like, you know, when it's one of your favourite artists, they bring out new music. And
yeah,
you're like, this is great. And there were still like really good little, it didn't feel like it was a sellout at all, but because there were still like moments where I heard all that. But I think, I don't know. I can't fully put my finger on why I didn't pick a song from there.
Well, the thing is that, you know, based on, here's another like great thing about her as not just an artist, but as a person to follow in the public eye, is that I do feel like she's very trustworthy because she's extremely honest. And like, obviously, it's easy to be honest about like speaking truth to power or like, you know, saying things that like you feel are dishonest or fake. But like, she's honest about her own output and her own behavior. And she'll just say, and she's got that very, you know, sort of almost monotone delivery that when she's doing interviews, she's like, yeah, I did Jesus and it was kind of contrived. It wasn't very good. I felt like I had to do something. I was grieving the loss of my child. I hated my band. I hated touring it. I was sad all the time.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, and it's so rare. It's really rare.
I mean, it is because it's, again, it's just her honesty. And I don't think people are prepared for that. People are sort of expect someone to come on, plug their album, say it's the best thing they've ever written, how much they love doing it. And she was there, and, you know, that's what she kind of said. And I think that's another reason why, you know, a lot of the press and tabloids gave her such a hard time, because she would say it before they got a chance to.
Yeah.
So I think they were just like, right, we have to just dial this up now. Whatever we're going to say about her, we just need to make it even more harsh.
Well, that's what she says in her like in her book as well, which is again really well written. And I generally don't like a celebrity memoir. I find them kind of formulaic, but I think she goes out of her way to sort of avoid formulas with it. That makes it interesting.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, part of the reason me doing this, part of it is that like I want my daughters to have this record of my thoughts, and you can feel that in the writing.
Oh my God, absolutely. Yeah.
It feels like, because generally when you read a celebrity memoir, particularly they've written themselves, which is quite rare to begin with, it's like, I hate them so much, they're just like, you know, 2014 LA, I'm swimming in a cerulean pool when my agent tells me I've won, da 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 da.
Yeah.
But that wasn't always the case. Once I was a little girl trapped on the edges of a society, and blah, blah. And it's like so sort of florid and wants to really set them as like the hero of this like magnificent story. And you can so tell that when Lily like sat down to write this book, she was like, this is good. This is for my daughters. If I die tomorrow, they wouldn't just have the tabloids to go by. And I want every sentence to be true and direct and not couched in like, oh, I couldn't believe it. At me. Look where I am now. She's like, my kids don't need that. They actually don't, you know?
No, and I think it's so, again, something that she like, when she talks about the book, that she brings up a lot is like, she's not, she openly says, it's not the truth. It's my
it's
truth.
A truth, yeah.
Because if it's a story that involves my brother,
yeah,
he's going to have his truth of it because we saw it from different perspectives or we had different versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really important. But, you know, especially when it comes to the press thing, I think there was a time where a newspaper had got hold of part of the book. You know, they said, oh, we're going to print this part of the book because we think it's going to be great news. Like, within seconds she was on Twitter and she told everyone, she's like, it's not like meant to be an exciting part of the book. It's actually quite the opposite. It's like a really sad moment.
Yeah.
I didn't tell it to be this kind of like, oh God, how exciting, how crazy. It's like I was telling it because I was in a really bad place at the time.
Yeah.
And like to even just put the record straight, just like that, I'm like, the press, that's why the press give her a hard time, because she gets there ahead of them. She just says it how it is. It's not fair that they do that.
Yeah.
It's not cool that they do that. But, you know, she does. She gets there before them to just say it. And she's like, oh, I'm not going to try and explain it any differently. That's what they're going to say.
Yeah.
But this is why.
Yeah. It's so cool.
Yeah.
And it's so rare, actually. It's strangely rare to, like, when you hear an artist talk about how the press treats them.
Mm.
So, it's rare that they have a succinct and clear version of it. And this is, I think, what I go back to with her being someone who was born around fame and grew up around fame and having a very inbuilt thing of how it works. Like, I was listening to an interview where she was like, oh, yeah, you know, Rupert Murdoch bought MySpace to crush it because it was becoming too powerful for the papers, and then the papers do it. She has a very clear and logical brain of, like, here's the infrastructure I operate within, and here's how all these forces come down on me, and it's a small way, but it's a way that affects my life, and it's not fair, and you should be mad about it too, you know?
Yeah.
But she's so just unbelievably concise about it. I think she's a great mind, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very difficult thing to, you know, actually speak up and say that. And, like, it's not like she just says, oh, newspaper. She calls out what papers, you know.
Yeah.
She says it, and it's like, wow.
There's a bit
very refreshing
on George Ezra's podcast I know we would listen to.
Yeah.
Where, and do you know what? Up my hands up. I never gave a thought to George Ezra before, but now I think he's a very nice young man. Because I think he's a good interviewer. So
it was very
you,
good.
You watch that George Ezra. I bet he's going to go places.
he'll be all right.
But he sort of admits that he's like, I don't say things. I don't. And she chastises. She kind of brings up on it. She's like, that's not good enough. Like, you have to.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, but I don't feel like I'm well read enough. She was like, well, you think racism is bad, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so true. It's like, you're in this position, and it's a very fortunate position where, and it's not just musicians, I suppose it's anyone that's sort of in the arts in general, that they get fans, so they get people listen to them.
Yeah. And she has a real clear sense of, like, the legacy of music in the 80s and, like, Rock Against Racism and all these artists who had a very clear political mindset.
Yeah.
And how, and she talks a lot about Spotify and streaming and about how it has defanged music in a very real way, and how, like, she something she says, I think, was really brilliant, where she's like, if, you know, back in the 80s or whatever, someone, or 70s, someone was listening to The Clash, they had a reaction to it, and some of the reaction was really positive and some of it was really negative, but it got on the radio anyway because people were talking about it.
Yeah.
And you sort of, you change that to Spotify, where it's like people are skipping over it, and that's because they don't like it, but that doesn't mean it's not good, you know?
No, yeah. And it's,
and therefore, the mediocre, the thing that, the things that most people agree on, that is okay, i.e. the George Ezra's, like, that's the stuff. That's the stuff that becomes incredibly popular. And it is it is quite toothless. Sorry. Like,
well, because it's like, I feel like we're, like,
poor George Ezra.
Yeah, I know, Griffin hates George Ezra. I like a lot of George Ezra's music. But it's like, you know, a radio station could be like, great, George Ezra's just released a song. We're going to be able to play him for years because...
Yeah.
It's George Ezra. He's never going to, you know...
He'll never die.
And it'll always be, you know, happy song and where it's like... Certain artists, they must be like, oh, they're bringing out this new song, we haven't heard it yet, but is it going to be something we're going to have to play a lot? And it's like, well, no, it should be like, if it's a popular song...
But that thing of, like, radio DJs used to be really powerful, and maybe in some ways that was negative, but the positive ways of that was that, like, a curator, like somebody who had, and, like, you still get that with, like, Lauren Laverne or someone, like, where it's like, here's somebody with extremely good taste who will play things that might confuse you, but is good for you and you should be hearing, as opposed to the Spotify thing of, like, my Spotify mix, or that gets recommended to me, is flawless, and that's bad. Because I shouldn't be listening to Phoebe Bridgers and people who sound like Phoebe Bridgers all the time.
No,
I should be, like, tested. Like, let's talk about Chinese. I love Chinese.
Oh.
It's so, so sweet.
So there's
the first real sweet song we've talked about so far.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of... This is silly, but there's a lot of her songs that I'm like, that's exactly how I idolise a monogamous relationship. Well, I'm like, you know, when she talks about, you'll make me beans on toast and a nice cup of tea. Yeah. I don't even really like beans on toast, but I'd love someone to do that for me. Yeah. And it's
like, about her mum, right? Is it not?
See, I didn't know that.
I always thought it was about her mum.
Oh, wow. Oh, this is...
When I listen to it, it's about my mum.
What? I mean, it so could be.
Why did I always think... I mean, there's
something... Why didn't I?
It's a bit like, how do we know that a Humpty Dumpty is an egg? Like, because it doesn't say anywhere in the lyrics that he is. But I always thought it was his...
I'm trying to think of the lyrics. I don't want anything more than to see your face when I walk through the door. Yeah. You know, that is could so be about her mum.
Let's look up the lyrics.
Okay, so I mean, it's weird that I've then referenced that with being like... That's how I imagine monogamy.
Like a very special lady.
Oh, she is, but, you know, I've just sort of compared it to...
Okay, so I think here's my case for it being her mum. So the first, and you can disagree, your version can still be true.
Sure.
She says, I see you from the sky. I wonder how long it'll take me to get home. I'll wait for an hour or so at the carousel, have a cigarette to pass the time because the traffic's hell.
Oh, this now makes sense.
Her coming home from tour and being in her mum's house is what I felt it was about.
Or even you just reading that bit, yeah, it's made me think about, you know, quite an early part in her book where she didn't get picked up from school.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's probably a heartbreaking thing for a kid. I can only imagine.
It's really awful to read about. Yeah. And she
and that's early in the book and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah, she's like seven.
Yeah, yeah. And she like doesn't get picked up. So, I mean, yeah. I can now totally see. This is amazing. I love that I'm learning new stuff.
Thank you.
There's me coming in being like, yeah, I know everything about every single one of her songs on every album.
I think it's fine. And I don't know why I decided it definitely was about her mum the first time I listened to it. Maybe I was having some of my own issues. But she does talk a lot about her mum in the book. And like she's very clear that she's like, you know, she's like, everything my mum did, all the ways she failed us are the ways in which I have also failed my daughters. Like this thing of like overscheduling work because you have a drug addiction and you need to get away from your family in order to facilitate your addiction. And then when you come back to your family is when you don't use and you feel suffocated and trapped. And she's like, I've been there. I've done those things. I get it.
Yeah.
I forgive my mom now, but it also doesn't remove the fact that she hurt me deeply, like in a way that is sort of like abuse by negligence, really, you know?
And I think it's so interesting, that thing of being like, you know, for someone, well, anyone really, you work so hard to, you know, get to a certain point or where you want to strive to in a career, but also you want to have life at the same time. So they have children. It's like, how do those two things balance? And, she speaks about her mum not being able to balance it very well. Yeah. And she speaks about not being able to balance it very well.
Yeah. Which is so rare. Like, I think we hear artists talk about their children and they like, they have an interview, they talk for 45 minutes about their work, their art, how they feel about it and their whatever. And then they'll be like, oh, well, you know, Marlowe is six and Crucible is two and they're the most darling little boys and that's it. And it is hard not seeing them, but when I do see them, it's very special. Goodbye now.
Yeah. And it'll be like the most like obvious thing, being like, yeah, fuck, loves to paint.
Like, and is he proud of daddy? Yeah. Oh, you know, I don't think he has much of an idea, really.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. But like Lily on an interview, it's like these questions she's still asking herself. She'll just be like, and in her songs as well, it's particularly in the fourth album, which I think is her real masterpiece.
I think it's the best.
It's so best fucking album. Good. And like she's really sitting in like, I am failing my children daily. We are absolutely opposed in what we both want and what we both think is best. I need to do my work to pay my mortgage. She wants me to be around all the time. She wants to have a consistent life and I can't give it to her and I'm really sorry and I don't know if I'll ever be able to forgive myself.
Yeah.
And you so rarely hear artists sit in that.
No, and I think it's so... I mean, even, you know, obviously there's a very specific song on the album, Three, about that. And it's like, again, it was one of them songs that I remember listening to it for the first time and I was like, oh, this is amazing. And then it got to the chorus, I was like, I'm only three. I was like... What does that mean, I wonder? What does it mean for someone to be three? And then I was like, oh, wait, she's talking about her kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, this is heartbreaking.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah. I think that with that whole album in general, like, she's like, this is all of it now.
Yeah, it's all of it, yeah.
I still think it's like so amazing that the book My thoughts exactly, coming out with an album called No Shame. I mean, it must have just been like, do you know what? This is it now. It's all coming out. And I think...
There's no set dressing. It's just like, here's it, here it is.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like that... It really is that in every aspect of her life, you know, in all sort of areas, where it's like she talks about the addiction and the lifestyle that she was just living in general. You know, that's in certain songs. Which is really interesting. And, you know, I mean, I was really... I still don't know how my mate Aaron got the tickets, but...
Aaron very much is the supporting character of this.
He really is, yeah. He better listen to it now. Yeah, he will be. But he got these tickets. I remember it was like so classic fan moment of like... I was at drama school at the time, and some people are going to find this out for the first time. I like pretended that I was not feeling great in the afternoon because I was like, I have to get to Tufnell Park because Aaron is sat on the floor queuing, lining up.
Oh my God.
I was like, and he kept texting me that he needed a coffee because he'd been there for like 2 hours. So I was like, I need to leave school early for this. Like school, like it's ridiculous.
I have a tummy
ache. Yeah, I was like, oh, I don't feel so good. I need to go. And he's like, do you want to just sit and watch? Nah, I better go. See you later. Run into the bathroom, put a Lily Allen t-shirt on, and run to Tufnell Park.
I can't believe you didn't wear your Lily Allen t-shirt today.
I know. I did think that was going to be a bit much. Not one. I've got one from every time I've seen her. We managed to get these tickets, and it was such a small gig. I think there was like between 200 and 300 people there. Mm. And it was just before No Shame came out. Mm. So there was no set. It was literally like two musicians on stage and just her performing this entire album.
Wow, brand new album.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it was amazing. Because like you say, it was what it was. There's no set. It is what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It was really like...
It's such an amazing... Let's just skip on to this album because I think it's so amazing. I think the second album is brilliant because... But it is like stories or it's like, you know... idea, like the thing, not fair, it's like that can very easily be about someone specific, but it's also kind of about the general experience of men and women and having sex, right?
Yeah.
Like, and there's lots of those, and like, you know, Fuck You is like obviously a very political song, and
huge
she just sang it with Olivia Rodrigo, and like, but these are not diary entries, they're not memoir in the way No Shame, the fourth album, is just feels like, it feels like selected diary entries from a year of a person's life, a really hard, bad year. You know?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And as I say, it's not just, you know, like relationship. It's not just being a mother. It's not just the lifestyle. It's everything. It's literally just like, I'm going to put it all in an album.
Yeah,
in a book and in an album.
The line from the, because I hadn't listened to it until I didn't even know it existed, because I think, and she talks about it, but she talks about the fact she's like, I'm too old to be Radio 1, I'm a mother, they don't know how to market me, and so I'm never really going to be famous again, and maybe that's okay, but it's kind of annoying, you know, that no one's going to hear about my music, because I hadn't heard about it at all.
No.
And hearing that first track, there's a bit where the lyric is, if you go on the record saying that you know me, then how come I'm so lonely because nobody fucking phones me?
Yeah.
And it's like, for a first track, it's like, fuck.
Yeah.
It's just
a great opening track.
It situates you in like, this is somebody who's been famous for most of their life. And like, that thing of like, and you know, I have this with people who are, you know, bigger and more, like even Dolly, where it's like, I assume she'll be busy all the time because she looks busy all the time and she does a lot of stuff and like... And then I'll realize that maybe I, you know, did need to call her or something. And that, like, if that's what it's like for our pal Dolly Alderton, then what's it like for Lily Allen? Someone who's been famous for a long time of like thinking someone is like self-sufficient and glamorous and just doing their thing and actually just like really fucking struggling, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's so true. And, I think that side of it comes in as well in Trigger Bang.
Trigger is such... a good song.
It's amazing.
It's so
I think
good.
That was the first single of the album.
It's it's massive.
And it is amazing. And he came out at the gig, at that small gig in Tufnell Park that I went to. He come on and did the song with her. But there's this, you know, it's like, I mean, the whole thing is amazing. It's very much like that. But, you know, what's the bit where she talks about like hanging out at the firehouse and stuff like that?
Yeah.
And she's like, she literally says, she's like, I was just hanging out there too much. Like, just because it was something to do and it looked like I was sort of that thing of looking like you're busy and that you're around.
Yeah.
That's what that whole song, I think, is sort of about. It's like, now I just don't hang around with them people because actually they're not fucking good for me.
With Trigger Bang, there's this thing, there's like an honest amount of melancholy and sadness to it. There's this thing, like, you know, that's why I can't hang out with the cool gang. Everyone's a trigger bang, 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 bang. And it's like this thing of, she really wishes she could be the kind of person who could just have a sparkling water and have a laugh anyway and just be out with cool people and meet cool people and just be one of those great people who don't even make a thing that they're not drinking. And you don't even notice. But she sort of knows she can't be and she never will be and she just has to sort of step back from it. And like, it feels very mournful.
Yeah, it's so true. And I think even what you just, you know, sort of said is like, there's a huge respect for someone who has been an addict, if she classes herself as an addict, I don't know. To just say, like, actually, like, you know, just because I'm on this road of recovery now, it doesn't mean it's easy. It's
or not over.
It's like, you know, as someone who's in recovery, you sort of really appreciate that when someone actually turns around and goes, do you know what, like, just because it happened that long ago and it was that far away in my life doesn't mean that it's not still a struggle.
Yeah,
you know, it's not, and not to glamorize it, it doesn't glamorize that world of being addicted to alcohol and drugs.
Yeah, and like, there's something about, like, when I was young, I was blameless. I had a foot in the rave because I, you know, whatever. I like this thing of, like, being blameless kind of thing. And it comes up a couple of times in that song of, like, it's nobody's fault, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, yes, you have to be responsible for your actions, but, you know, it's not a moral thing, you know? I guess is what I got from that. Maybe it's not what she means, but it's what I took from it. Apples is the final song we have today.
It is the final song, and I think it's my favourite Lily Allen song.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that?
There's a lot of reasons. I think one is stripped back.
Yeah.
The whole song is just her singing and an electric guitar.
Yeah, which is, for somebody whose music has always been so rinsed in influences and different sounds layering on top of each other.
There's something that I hear in it, and I remember when I sort of heard it for the first time, and I could not stop listening to it. Is I was like, it's actually a way of being like, taking a step back after a relationship and being like, these were great moments, you know. But now, like, the line where it's like, after the bridge, it's like, but it was all too much for me. Now I'm exactly where I didn't want to be.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, it was great. We had our highs, we had our lows. Unfortunately, now I'm in a position that is the reason I didn't want to go through all of that. Because I'm now in the exact place that my mum and dad are.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is split up and a single parent.
Yeah. It's really sad. Like, this thing of, and she recounts their whole relationship in this very soft, like, whispery thing of, like, you know, two years we had in the country and then you gave me my beautiful babies.
Yeah, I love that bridge. I think it's great. It's like, 1 year and you gave me a set of keys.
Yeah.
2 years and you bended down on one knee. 3 years we're living out in the country. 4 years and you give me my beautiful babies. Like, she's literally gone through it and like that. And you're like, you can see this whole relationship. And then it sort of, even the guitar drops out. And she's like, but it was too much for me. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
But I think so many lyrics in that are so honest and pure. You know, before one of the choruses, she says, I like a drink, but that does not make me a wreck.
Yeah.
It's like, oh God. You can almost like feel that argument, you know, when that was an argument or a conversation that you have in a relationship where she's going, you know.
Yeah.
Just because I like a drink, it doesn't make me a wreck.
But it's like a person who's like lived with themselves long enough to know I'm this, but I'm not this. You know, it's like I have a very clear-eyed view of who I am and the things I have wrong with me, and like the things I've done. I've cheated on you, and I'm up to that. And, but like, you can't also just totally throw my entire character under the bus.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think what you've just said is like a huge thing, because it really relates to something I know that I spoke to you about before, which is there's like two or three pages in the book, in the introduction, that are just single lines and sentences that just all start with "I am."
Mm.
It's just her saying, "I am this, I am this, I am this."
Yeah.
And I think that's what that song essentially is saying. It's like, this is what it is. It's just all out. The cards are sort of all dealt now. They're out. It's like I'm saying it. So I think it's a really, it's like a heartbreaking song.
Yeah.
But, you know, something that I think she does amazingly is make it an incredibly catchy and listenable song, you know. So I think, yeah, I think it's probably my favourite one.
It's a good one. It's a great one to end on.
Yeah.
I think. Do you want my one anecdote?
Please. Oh, yes.
I have one anecdote about Keith Allen, her father.
Okay.
And I actually, there's a very slim chance that Leanne might listen to this. Who knows? Like,
I hope so.
She did Dolly's podcast, so she's in our sphere.
That's true. That's true.
Dolly's come up a lot in this one. but
you're going to have to put it in the title. Lily Allen and Dolly Alderton.
With Dolly Alderton references. But so many years ago, I was working on a set of a movie. I was a production secretary. It's like 11 years ago. And Keith Allen was in the movie.
Okay.
It was a movie called The Magnificent 11.
Okay.
It was a football retelling of The Magnificent 7. And it is the worst movie in the world. Is the worst film in the world, but Keith Allen has a starring role. And in it, there was a small job for a building site manager.
Okay.
And in the script, he was Irish, and we hadn't cast him yet. And I lied and said, and my dad had done some amateur theatre, and I lied and said my dad was like a proper Irish thesp. And they were like, "Oh my God, will he do it?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think I can convince him." And I rang him. I was like, "Dad, do you want to be in a movie?" And like, he was like, "That was my dad's like his big dream was to be an actor." And
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like he has like clippings at home from like small local theatre, and he by all accounts was very good, you know.
Oh, okay.
But just had to let it go, you know. And so he came over for the day, and his only scene was with Keith.
No.
And so they were in the trailer just together.
Yeah.
For like a couple of hours, you know how slow things are. And at the time, my eldest sister, who's Lily's age, I think, was pregnant. And so was Lily with her eldest, Ethel. Is Ethel? Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, my dad just sat with Keith Allen in like makeup chairs or whatever. And Keith kept looking at his phone. He was like, "Sorry, my dad has no fucking clue who Lily Allen is at all, by the way." He kind of knows who, he kind of knew Keith Allen was.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because of comic strip, but had no other context.
Sure, sure.
And Keith was kept looking at his phone. He was like, "Sorry, my daughter's pregnant." And I'm just like, she's really near and I'm really nervous because she had a very tragic thing happen or whatever. My dad just like, "Oh, my daughter's pregnant." And they just kind of exchanged pregnant daughter stories.
No way.
And then afterwards I was like, "How did it go?" And he was like, "Oh yeah, I was talking to him about his daughter's pregnant." I was like, you know who that is, right?
He's like, "No." Wow.
So
that's amazing.
When I was reading her book, I was like, she kind of asserted that her dad didn't really care about her, and maybe, you know, or that he was a narcissist or is a narcissist. Mm. I'm sure that's probably true, and it sounds on the money based on my working experience with him. But I just want her to know that he was checking his phone all day.
Well, that's always good. I think it's so interesting with that, isn't it? Because I think, like, he's now known as Lily Allen's dad.
Yeah, yeah, not Keith Allen.
The actor. Not Lily Allen. So
I think it's better. I hope Keith's not. Sorry, that is
well,
me.
Well, I really hope Keith doesn't listen to this.
All right, the dog's awake, so that means we have to get out of here.
Yeah, he's up. He's up.
All right, Connor, this has been lovely. What a lovely chat this has been.
It's been great. Thank you very much for having me.
I think we've both almost cried a few times.
Yeah, we've been close. I felt it. I have felt it a few times. I'm like, oh, God.
All right, let's get a pint.
This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. The podcast was produced and edited by me, with mix and music by Harry Harris and artwork by Gavin Day. If you'd like to email me about the pod, you can do so on sentimentalpod@gmail.com or get in touch with me directly on Twitter or Instagram at Zaraline.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.